Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel. Each week they unleash their raw, stripped down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables. By the way, you can follow us on Facebook, on our Facebook page. We invite you to like and share that. On this week's show, yes, we filled another show. 3-on-3 hockey. They're going to start it next year in the summer. And Russ and I weigh in on that. Yes, a breakaway league from the NHL with a bunch of Hall of Fame guys getting involved. Also, Rusty talks about plays that don't work for guys, and he did one himself. Yes, he embarrassed himself trying something as a hockey player. The other thing is, not everybody wants to be the best. He's talking about athletes here. And a totally interesting take that he has on that. And playoffs. The NHL is talking about coming back with a 2014 playoff. That and much, much more. Hang on. I tell a joke at the end of the show. Much more coming up on The Suspendables. And that little rattling noise you heard, there it is, right there. Boom.
The claw. Boom, boom.
It's the claw. There's Rusty Cortinel. How are you, Russ?
I am good, thank you.
Yeah, swallow that, okay?
Yeah. Take a big sip.
I can, you know, the start of our show, of course, you live in California. There's kind of the three things we hear. Flip-flops coming across the floor, right? Which always pisses me off because I live in Edmonton. Right? We're wearing snow boots.
You know, in Hawaii, they call them slippers, not flip-flops.
Slippers?
Yep.
Yeah, well, that's stupid. They should be called flip-flops. And and then the rattling of the can of beer, the unplugging of the ice machine, or the temperature gauge in your yeah. Wine cellar. You probably you go through that pretty good. How many bottles of wine do you have, Rusty?
Had before COVID, I had about 500, and now I'm down a bit.
You would be down a bit. A
lot of empty spots in there.
Well, we're going to talk about a bunch of stuff, but on today's show, coming up, we're going to talk about COVID and the NHL starting to talk about phasing games back in the playoffs. There's a new 3-on-3 league that they're putting together to play in 2021. It's a breakaway league, of course, from the NHL with a bunch of Hall of Fame coaches who have stepped up. Pretty interesting stuff. And the NFL gassed their video review this week.
Really?
Okay, they had video review for pass interference. They launched right into it because there was a terrible call in a New Orleans game there last year, and they blew the call, and it ended up, you know, the team missing out on the fucking Super Bowl or something. So they've changed their mind on that. And so video review, 3-on-3 and the COVID deal. But let's talk about your week first, Rusty. You were who were you playing golf with? You sent me pictures.
Yesterday, I played golf with a buddy. He invited me out, and I played with Cedric the Entertainer.
Oh, sure, I remember that guy. I love that guy.
Yeah, he's on a show called The Neighborhood, and what was really interesting was he's from St. Louis, and he's a big hockey fan. So I was, you know, I'm like, hey, do you know Holly? Yeah, you know my brother. Yeah, you know Kelly Chase, and he was and I said, great for you guys winning the cup, and so we had fun. Played golf yesterday with him, and it turns out his daughter and my daughter know each other. Our youngest kids are, they know each other through Toni Braxton's two boys.
I love Toni Braxton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. She's something. And so...
Breathe Again, that's one of her songs.
Breathe In, yeah, Breathe In, Breathe Out. And the two of them have crossed paths through that relationship, so we were, you know... We were laughing about that, being two dads of two daughters hanging out with two boys. And then The other guy was from Alice in Chains.
So you play with a guy from Alice in Chains.
Yeah.
Cedric. And did I see the text right that you were playing with someone from The Doors?
Yeah, Robbie Krieger from The Doors. He's 74 years old. He's as big as a pencil and he bombs it. Like, I'm telling you, this guy, he played in the group in front of us because he can only play. There was eight of us. So I played with Cedric and Jerry from Alice in Chains. And
dude from The Doors.
I mean, he was just this little old guy. He's 74 years old. And I guess he grew up on a golf course and he's played golf his whole life. And I'm watching him and he's just pounding it out there. It was great. Yeah. So we had a fun, fun afternoon. A lot of cigars. A lot of good stories and a few White Claws.
There you go.
I shot a Ray Ray.
You shot a Ray Ray?
Yeah.
Let me guess what that is. A Ray Ray. Yeah. Lindros was 88. Of course, the great 99 is the great one.
I was 47-40. So I was Ray Charles on the front and Ray Floyd on the back.
Very funny. A Ray Ray.
Scott Hamilton told me that. I remember when Scotty was a member of Sherwood and the figure skater.
Yeah.
And he came off the golf course and I said, "How'd you do?" And he goes, "I shot a Ray Ray." And he told me that. So I never forgot it.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. Ray Ray.
I told you, you know, guys, when they play golf, I got a rule. All right. Because, you know, we're all kind of shitty golfers at our own level, if you know what I mean. You know, I used to be a good player and now I'm not. And you know, you say you're getting shittier as time goes by. So for some reason, the real shitty golfers seem to come into the clubhouse after and want to go, "Hey, you got to hear about my round today." Okay, you've been through this, right? You probably got guys at your club, everyone running for their life when the guy walks in because the guy can't break 90, but he insists on telling you about his round, right? And it's fucking torture. It's torture, you know? I got a buddy who says when the guy sits down and goes, "Okay, hey, listen, here's what happened to me today, okay? On the fourth hole," and the guy goes, "Hang on, do I need to get a cart?" So I have a rule, Russ. What's your handicap?
I'm a 14.
14. So I give you a number at the beginning of the year, okay? If you're a 14, if you break 81, or if you break 80 as a 14, that's really good. Mm-hmm. And I'll listen to that story.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll listen to that. If you're a 6 and you shot 72, okay, I'll listen to that. If you're a 14 and shot 94, I'm not fucking listening to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I'm not listening to your story. So.
Well, we solved that problem at Sherwood when Mr. Murdoch built the place. He put a right at the exit in the men's grill. There's a little sign there. Next time you're down, you got to read it.
Okay.
And it says you're not allowed to join another table unless invited or ask people for autographs. And he had a lot of celebrities from Beverly Hills in the movie business back in the day. And it was to protect them so that, you know, when Joe Pesci and Jack Nicholas, Nicholson was out there and Will Smith is there and they can go there and be comfortable. And so we don't have those idiots that come over to the table.
I was going to say, you must have spent a lot of time sitting alone at your own table.
Yeah, yeah. At least I'm in the room. You're outside with your nose on the window.
Yeah.
If you get through the gates.
It's hard to explain to people, even you as a member, I know you don't take it for granted, you know, that you're a member of one of the most exclusive golf clubs in the world. There's no doubt about it. And they got some cool things that go on there. And one of the first ones that blew my mind when I played there a bunch of times, when I walked in as a guest to the locker room, and Gretz took me through and said, "Here's your locker." And I said, "Okay." He goes, "Do you know how I figured it out?" I said, "No." He goes, points up to the top of the locker, and they've got my name carved in a brass plate as a guest, you know?
Yeah.
And then the other really cool thing about that club is you sit out in the, you know, there's the lounge.
Yeah.
Okay. The men's, it's probably still a men's lounge, is it? I don't think women are allowed in that lounge. And it's right beside the locker room, but there's no doors separating the locker room. And I remember a guy walking around there in a towel.
Yeah.
Coming out the fucking bar out of the locker room. So you look over, he's getting a coffee. I'm like, "I'm having my clubhouse sandwich here. Can you cover up a bit?" Well, anyway, yeah,
it's a pretty
cool
special place. The first day I was a member there, I got my locker, right? So I actually went in and I had my bag and and I put on all my golf attire. And when I first joined in 1993, you had to wear pants. You couldn't wear shorts. So I carry my shoes, because back then we had the metal cleats, and I was walking in my socks, carrying my shoes. And I go up to the guy, I go, "Hey, when can I put on my shoes? I didn't want to ruin the carpet." And the guy's like, "No, this is the men's locker room. You can wear your cleats in here." And I'm like, "Oh my gosh." Fantastic. It's like walking through your mother's living room with your shoes on. Click, click, click.
So, Rusty, the NHL is starting to talk about phasing in early June. I mean, we're near the end of May here.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about striking it up with practices, with some restrictions on there. There's too much to read about it all. I read it this morning. About, you know, six players are allowed on the ice. There's no coaches allowed on ice. Obviously, the social distancing, bunch of testing you have to do, retesting. And so they're going to allow you in certain practice facilities and in cities that are, you know, have let off some of the restrictions. And then the big talk, Russ, is this 24 team playoff that they're going to try and jam in there this year. Which is totally surprising to me, but what do you think about all that?
I don't think it's the greatest plan, but it's a plan that allows us to cheer on our favorite team and hopefully win the cup. And I think that for the players and the fans, at least there's something. And we're in new territory here with all this COVID. So everyone's dealing with things they haven't had to deal with before or hopefully ever again. And so I just think that they're doing the best they can, and they want to have somebody hoist the cup, and it's going to be different. I think whoever wins will have that asterisk, unless it's one of the top four teams in the league. You know, if somebody just comes out of nowhere and just gets hot and wins the whole thing, and they, you know, didn't have a chance 2 months ago, they'll have that asterisk, but at least it's something. And when I say it, I didn't mean it as the best plan. It's just the plan that they can put together. And and you know what? We'll see what happens. We'll see how it's received on television and with no fans and players, you know, playing like that. It's going to be weird. It really is going to be weird. But at least somebody will get their name on the cup this year.
Right. Yeah, you mentioned that. There might be an asterisk beside the team who wins. Although, Russ, there's a few players that who've weighed in on this, and yes, they'll say, okay, there should be an asterisk beside it, but one of the reasons may be because it was the toughest Stanley Cup ever to win, is the take that a few guys have on this thing. If you win this thing, even like you say, a team comes out of nowhere and knocks the doors off everyone and wins, is there any part of you, Russ, that says, wow, that's a tough cup to win, given everything that's happened?
Think of the beginning of each year. So you have training camp, and then you start the season, and teams come flying out of the gate, and then they don't even make the playoffs. That team could win the cup. That's what I'm saying, is that this is it's going to be a new ball game, and some teams need time to get rolling, and other teams don't. And we saw the Montreal Canadiens a couple of years ago come out of their best team in the league, and they didn't even make the playoffs. So they could win the Stanley Cup based on just a two months of playing great hockey. So it's anyone's ball game, and it'll be the team that can gel and start playing really well in a short period of time, and then, you know, have a good run, and they'll all have a chance. So you can't. I just don't think you can sit there as somebody who maybe a bookmaker who's going to, you know, who's looking good, who's got this, who's got that. I mean, it's all that's out the window because we haven't seen anybody play for a couple months.
Right.
When you were in the playoffs, Russ, were you ever in them, speaking of teams who have a chance, who maybe do, maybe don't. By the way, this 24 team thing that they've implemented, or they're going to implement for this thing, which is 8 more teams than you normally have. Let's not kid ourselves. A lot of it had to do with money, you know, to bring in other big centers like Montreal and Chicago may squeak in here now, or they will. So there's that added thing that the commissioner's office is probably saying, you know, let's, if he had his way, he'd probably want every team to be in the playoffs to make up for a lost year. But was there any time, Russ, when you went into the playoffs, were you thinking consciously that, okay, I've got to do something different now than we did in the regular season, that we got to, like, did you talk to other players? Did you take a different role? Or is it sort of, okay, we're in the playoffs, head down and let's go, guys. And also, were there guys who you thought as you were moving through the playoffs that needed to be tuned up, that just couldn't take it because they were too nervous or something? Or how is it for teams when they go into the playoffs?
It's definitely a different game than the regular season, and the physical part of the game really amped up. And so for me, I tried to play a little more physical, but it just would wear the hell out of me because I wasn't a big guy. And I'm like, what am I doing? Like, why am I changing my game, you know, to play this certain way? And a couple of times coaches were asking me to do something that it just wasn't me. And then I'd be like, you know what? Screw this. I'm just going to go back to the way I normally play. And, and definitely there are players that rise to the occasion because of the different format and the physicality. And then when I played, they didn't dress a lot of the fighters. So they brought in other players because there was no fighting in the playoffs because you didn't want to risk penalties.
Sure.
So players that, you know, tough guys that had played most of the year, a lot of them got sat out in the playoffs, and other players would come in. And there was a player, I think, in Washington, Drews, and it was Drews on the loose. And he scored a bunch of goals, and his wife would hold up a sign every game, Drews is on the loose, and he scored a bunch of goals. And different players like that came out of nowhere and just got hot for 2 months and had some instant fame and sometimes short-lived fame. But it's possible that somebody can come through in the playoffs that you didn't ever expect. Just they get hot or somebody gets injured and they get to play with a better player. But you definitely, the one thing that coaches always talked to us about was, you know, don't take a stupid penalty, don't take a stupid penalty. And that's why a lot of the tough guys weren't dressed, because they couldn't help themselves. They'd go out and run a guy and they get a 2-minute minor for charging or elbowing or something. We couldn't afford bad penalties because in the playoffs, the power plays were goaltending and power play and penalty kill usually are, you know, what wins series. So
right.
You just didn't want to risk that.
So that's interesting stuff, Russ, about guys rising to the occasion, guys not playing your own game, maybe having to change your game. When you were watching games, Russ, when you were active as a player, because I want to talk about our great interview last week too, and we think of the great one. When you watched him, Russ, did you learn anything, or is he just so much better than other guys that you couldn't possibly learn anything from him, or could you?
Yeah, I think.
And what was it, if you did learn something, or try?
Obviously, watching Wayne, everybody just is amazed at what he could do, and I think that the one thing I tried to copy that he did was go hard down the wall, down the wing, and then turn back and try and hit guys coming late. But nobody could do it like him. But I tried, you know, that was something I had, was, you know, speed down the outside. And then if I couldn't get around the D man, I would turn back and try and hit somebody coming in late. But I didn't watch a lot of hockey. I think one of my regrets, what this day and age, we can watch anything with recording shows and games. And back then you had to get it taped and then take it home and put it in the VCR. And I just didn't watch as much hockey as I probably should have. But when I learned a lot from watching him and then Stevie Yzerman. I used to watch
sure.
Stevie Y. We're the same age, drafted in the same round, and played a lot of hockey against each other. And I really I liked Steve's composure. Like he had great composure with the puck. And when I was young, like Stevie, I used to just fly at the D-man, and you know, sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. And he used to take the puck back and then if he wasn't ready to go, he wouldn't always go flying up the ice. So
right.
I loved his composure. So watching hockey, watching anything that you do, watching other people do it is a great way to learn about yourself and try to make yourself better.
Right. Did you ever look at something and say, okay, I'm going to try that. And when you tried it, it was a complete flop and you went, fuck, that didn't work.
Yeah. I tried something in a game in Toronto and I went down and I put the puck between my legs and I tried to put it top corner, far side. And I came back to the bench and John Brophy benched me for trying to be too flashy.
Well, although you see kids doing it now.
Yeah, now it's like common, right? It's common, yeah. Yeah. R&D, rob and duplicate.
I love it when I see it. Do you?
Yeah, I like kids. I like it. The only thing I don't like when I watch is people who are selfish. And that's the only thing I can't stand is when
puck hogs.
Yeah, I just can't stand it. It drives me nuts. I really get upset when I see people who are selfish with the puck.
It's funny. Even when we play, you know, playground hockey or community hockey, you know, go down to the local rink, and everyone used to call guys, you know, fuck, puck hog, you puck up, that's a puck, you puck up.
Well, we know you didn't play hockey after our last interview with Gretz. He said that you were the worst hockey player ever.
He buried me. I'm going to talk about that. But it's the same in the NHL. I remember listening to some guys talk after a game going, fuck, he's a puck hog.
Yeah. Selfish.
Speaking of that, I wanted to bring that up. Speaking of the great one, this is show 51, but for our 50th, of course, we had the great one on for well over an hour. And the response we had from it was overwhelming.
That
people loved it. And you and I both still get nervous talking to him in an interview setting. But he was just completely exceptional about it. And what do you think, Russ? When you think of Wayne Gretzky, it's coincidental that we did have him on right at the time when the Michael Jordan series is out on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
I think you looked at some of that stuff, and he's been asked this before. Lots of people have been asked, but I don't know if I've heard from you what separates him, really, if you can try. And I know guys have tried to figure out what separates Tiger Woods or a Michael Jordan or a Tom Brady and then Wayne Gretzky. And what's your take on that, Russ?
I went to Croatia with Paul Coffey, and we were on a trip for gold medal plates at the time, which is raises money for Canadian Olympic athletes. And we would do these luncheons for the people on the trip. And I think we did two or three. And Paul, as you know, is an exceptional speaker.
Wasn't always, you know, he was so shy.
Everybody's the same, right? You get better at it the more you do it. But today he's exceptional, and he's got great stories to tell, great memory, like Wayne. And he would say to people, you know, when I was with Wayne, when I was playing with Wayne, he get 200 and something points, and the next year he was trying to get 300. he was serious. He goes, you know what? He's like, he's gunning for 300. Like, he was obviously just crushing everybody. I think his assists were more than the guy behind him in second place.
Right.
in points. But Wayne's mentality was he was trying to get to 300. And Jordan is like, okay, I got to win more championships. Wayne is all about championships and winning and doing better. And I think so many people get to a certain point and they go, you know what? This is perfect. I played with a couple guys, really good players. And when they hit 20 goals, they would just shut it down. And they would shut it down because they didn't want the pressure of having to score 30 the next year. And then really? I played with another guy in Toronto who got back-to-back 40 goals. And I said to him, why don't you score 50? And he goes, because then they'll expect 50 from me. So there are those.
That's weird.
That isn't weird because look around you. There are so many people that are happy with being average.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if you're a hockey player. It's called life. People get to a comfortable place in their life and they're like, I don't want more because I do not want the pressure of having to do it next year. And so people get to this point in their life and they go, oh, this is perfect. I just want to stay here. When they could do greater things, but they don't want to. And that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But the guys who are the best aren't satisfied with what happened yesterday. They want to be better and they want to be better than anybody. And with the Jordan series, we saw there was guys like weren't saying nice things about him. And he got upset in that interview and he had to take a break because he was welling up going, you know, if you don't want to play the way I want to play, then too bad. But that's how I prepared myself or however he said it. He was upset because he saw his teammates calling him a jerk or whatever
for
wanting it so bad. And anytime you have success in your life, I think like that crazy success, you know, Bill Gates, do you think there's some people along the way that he pissed off? Probably.
All right. It's sort of like all these guys who reached the pinnacle.
Mm-hmm.
Like you make a great point. There is no pinnacle. No, I'm going to keep going. Right? Even at the top of their game. All of them, Russ, it seems to me, have this unwavering, fierce, fierce, fierce desire to keep winning all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and anyway, thanks a lot to Gretz for that interview. Thanks a lot to all your emails.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, all responses. People have been reaching out to me going, I just listened to it. For the fourth time.
Well, Chelly screwed it up. Chris Chelly's because he had a barbecue that Wayne had to go to. So Wayne probably would have stayed another hour. But
he wrecked it for us.
It was good. It was really good.
We got a Facebook page. The Suspendables Facebook page. We got a.
Is your face on it?
Mine is, yeah. Oh, I said the greatest thing, so we got this Facebook page. We're going to do a couple of Facebook Lives that we started last week. We got a guy, David, who's helping us out with this stuff. It's fantastic. If you've seen some of the promos this guy put together, they were so good that he had this guy in London, England, do this promo for us about the interview with the great
one. That was good. Said,
people thought it was real. They thought it was an actual breaking story on the news.
Yeah. It was good.
Yeah, and he has us in museums and all this other stuff. It's great.
As my friends say, when I wrote this letter for, I passed on this letter for Discovery, the company I work for, and they're like, there's no way you wrote that. And I go, I have people. You're right, I didn't write it.
Yeah.
We have people, Jimmy. We have people. We got a guy in London.
Yeah, I'll tell you what the funniest thing about this whole thing about us, you know, getting a social media guy who's going to manage it for us. And because you got to generate listeners and you want to keep pushing ahead and moving forward. So we have Dave who's looking after this for us. And you did an interview on Toronto Radio. And I said to you, I said, make sure you plug our Facebook page. And you said, no problem. And I said, that might prove very stupid because you're plugging our Facebook page, yet you don't use Facebook.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, we invite you to look at that and like it and share. That would be great. As we move along here, Rusty, have you read about this 3-on-3 league they're going to start next year? They've locked up 8 Hall of Fame former players, including Brian Trottier and Grant Fuhr and John LeClair. I think Larry Murphy's another guy, and a few others who are going to coach. There's going to be 8 teams. You're going to have 7 guys on each team. The way they're setting this up is you're going to go to one city each weekend for 9 weeks in a row, or 9 weeks over the summer, and have these tournaments in these cities. The teams may not necessarily come from a specific city. I don't think they're named by cities. And this thing is the real deal. It's obviously a breakaway thing from the NHL. How they're going to draw players from it, I'm not sure where they're coming from, Russ, but they wouldn't be NHL players. But there's talk that they might be kids who are eligible to play in the NHL, who are up-and-comers that people want to see, or guys who are maybe on their way out, who are playing in the minors somewhere or over in Europe. And I find it totally interesting. Originally when I heard, I said, this will never work. It'll never work because people want the NHL. And then I started to think, yeah, but people love the 3-on-3.
Yeah.
And what do you think?
Well, I went to the Sevens tournament for rugby in Vancouver, and it was so much fun for a weekend, and teams from all over the world, and every 30 minutes there's a new team on the field. And it's an event. It's fun. The athleticism is fantastic. So if they get the right players, you know, like you said, players that are trying to make it, and maybe this is a way for college kids and junior kids to play in this league while they try to get to the NHL. But the only thing I worry about is when they're promoting the coaches first. that scares me. And we got a Hall of Fame coaches, and we're, you know, it's going to be unbelievable, but we don't know where the players are coming from. I'm sure they have a bigger plan than that. But when you're promoting the coaches, as Gretz told Fatorik in Detroit when he was playing for the Kings, the 18,000 people here didn't come here to see you coach. They came here to see me play.
Zinger. I'm totally intrigued by this thing. I'm just totally curious as to whether it'll work.
Well, the fans show up to watch the old timers play. You know, these teams, you know, all the NHL teams have these alumni teams, and they go to these little towns, and 2,500 people or 3,000 show up to watch these retired players play against their local fire department, police department, or whatever it is. So I think there's definitely an audience to see fast hockey 3-on-3. It's exciting. Mm-hmm. And we all, I didn't agree with it when they brought it in, but I've probably said it on the show. You can always tell if it's successful with how many fans are in the building, and the fans wait and they watch it after when there's a tie in the NHL, and they watch 3-on-3 and then the shootout, they're there. The right. only thing they should have done is kept the beer sales going and the concession stands open. But I think there's an audience. I don't know, you know. I don't know. They've obviously put a lot of thought into it, and they'll see what happens with whether people will pay to come watch.
Right. Well, I think it solves a lot of not issues, but. But everyone has takes on their sport, you know, and in Canada, of course, everyone's got their take on hockey and what it should be like. And I think this thing fills a lot of voids that people say are too much in the game in the NHL, or that they want more. One is scoring, right? They all want more scoring. The other one is the price of tickets in the NHL, right? And the people are saying, okay, this thing's cost prohibitive now. I can't bring my kid. This thing would sort of, it's probably cheap tickets, Russ, that they'll have. You'll get to see this wide open hockey, and you often get that, right? They say today's game. Well, if you guys got to play, Russ, back in your day with no red line and no clutching and grabbing, it would have been a whole lot different. So, you know, people have been saying that for years about hockey. So this thing will probably you know, answer some of that stuff.
I would think. And they'll probably hit some cities where they don't get the, they don't. It's not an NHL city, so you know, some of these hockey star towns that you know, maybe they have junior hockey, but they want NHL caliber hockey, and this may bring it to their city, so it might work. I don't know. We'll find out.
Right, I agree. Yeah, you can go to your Halifax, your Saskatoons, your Windsors, you know, but places like that. So
go to Victoria, and
would you play? What if they ask you to play, Russ?
No, not a chance. I'm turning nickels this year. There's no way.
Have you turning nickels? There you go. Do you skate at all anymore?
No, I haven't. When I moved to Maui, in December of 2014, that was
not a bunch of rinks there.
Yeah, oh. I've only skated a few times since then, and I used to play in about 12 charity events a year, and you know, kept me on the ice, but I don't go out and skate. I tried going out, but the guys that you're playing with, they're too serious. They're trying to relive their childhood and show you that they could have played, but I don't play.
Yeah, you're like, well,
I have equipment still though.
Well, that's good. Yeah, you gotta hang on to that.
I haven't opened the bag in a while, so it might be ugly in there.
You have a washing machine, Russ? Okay, you can you could use that and fix it up. Okay, Rusty, here's what's going to happen now. As we wrap up the show, I got to start to tell a joke every week, okay?
Okay. Oh, God.
What do you mean, here, oh, God? Okay. So,
you're about one for 99.
No, stop it. So this is a story. The guy goes to the dentist, Russ, all right? And he says, I got a root canal. I got to get I got to get this thing pulled, right? And the dentist says, no problem, right? And he whips out the needle to freeze it. And the guy says, No, I can't stand needles. You're not doing that, man. And the dentist goes, well, it's going to, you know, this will kill you, the pain. He goes, I don't care. You got to come up with something else. And the dentist goes, no problem. He whips over the tripod with the mask, you know, for the laughing gas, right?
Yeah.
And he says, here you go. He goes, no, not doing that. You get freaking brain damage from that stuff. And the doctor says, oh, my God. You know, he says, no needle, no laughing gas. And the doc says, okay. And he sort of turns around, opens a drawer, and he grabs a little blue pill, you know, and the doc says, okay, well, here's your only other choice. Take this pill right now. And the guy says, well, what is it? The doc says, it's Viagra. And the guy says, well, what the fuck is that going to do? He said, it'll give you something to hang on to when I rip out that tooth. So, Rusty, we got another show coming up, and you're still in LA. You're on your way to Coeur d'Alene for the summer.
Yes.
And I don't know how you've been spending your time, Russ, over COVID. When you're not playing golf, when you're not working, what do you do?
I'm working.
Yeah, but your work is like 1 hour a day, man.
Yeah, you know what I did during COVID is I turned the heat on in the pool. I cranked it to 80. And I've been in my pool every single afternoon. It's awesome. So I Peloton in the morning. I try.
Wow.
5 or 6 days a week. And then I'm in my pool and I'm doing deals. I'm selling stuff at Gosser and I'm trying to sell James Island. So I'm busy smoking cigars and working the phones.
Yeah, that doesn't, you know, when
doesn't
you tell
sound
me
awful.
That,
I've only played golf once in the last 2 months.
You're telling me that. You're telling me that like it's like, oh, my God, does he work hard. Holy Jesus. Where does he find the time to relax?
Having a few of these while I'm doing it, too, yeah. The White Claws.
I ended up doing, well, you know, I was painting my house. I've told you about that.
Oh.
And it was so bad that now I've got to renovate because I went to I went to fix a wall and all this shit. I thought I would do this, and I'm so bad at it. I got people to come in now and fix up all the holes I put in fucking drywall and everything. Were you ever handy? By the way,
no, I break things when I try to fix them.
Yeah, you can't.
No,
you're no good.
No. Talking about painting, we had this buddy in Victoria, older friend, about 5 years older than us, and he liked to party.
Right.
And his nickname was Goop, and he was a painter.
Goop. And so what a bad Goop, handle.
Yeah, Goop. Goop. So he gets a painting job from one of our friends' elderly mother's house, and she pays him up front, pays him whatever the cost to paint the interior of the house. So he taped up all the windows, and then he went and followed the Rolling Stones on their concert for the entire summer. And when they got back, all her plants were dead, and she was white as a ghost.
Was she dead too?
What? No. She was white as a ghost. He had taped over every window. There was no light in the whole house. She was stuck in there for 3 months.
Oh, I get it. Okay, no tan, no sunlight. Oh, I get it.
Kind of
okay.
Like you.
Yeah, that's, you know, the fish belly white. I had a buddy. I had a friend of mine, my buddy Jed, who he was supposed to be a painter, you know, one of these college pro painters, you know, kids who have no experience.
Yeah.
But someone said, we're going to hire you as a painter for the summer, you know. And he had to, they had to peel a bunch of paint on a house, you know, exterior, okay? And if you know anything about fucking painting, that's the worst gig in the world. It just takes forever. So he started scraping this paint off, you know, on the side of a house.
Yeah.
And it was about 6 layers, and he was, you know, getting through each layer. And then he came across some duct tape below all these layers, you know, and he said, oh, cripes. And he peeled the duct tape off, and it pulled the other 2 layers underneath. And he went, huh. So he taped the entire house with duct tape. And he left it 2 weeks and came back and peeled all the duct tape off, and it got rid of all the old paint, Rusty. See?
Oh, my God.
Smart
guy. Lost money on the job, though. It's a lot of duct tape.
Have a good week, Rusty, and we'll talk to everybody next week. You've been listening to The Suspendables. Take care, everybody.
The Suspendables is a weekly hockey series with Jim Jerome in Edmonton and Russ Cortinel in LA. A new episode every Tuesday morning on Wooshka, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow The Suspendables on Facebook and Twitter. Reach us at thesuspendables@yahoo.com. And of course, we appreciate you sharing this podcast with your group of friends.